Hey everyone, welcome to the module. It's a fairly short module on memory and wired communication interfaces. So I'll just talk briefly, for about one slide's worth on memory. Back when we were choosing microcontrollers, I already mentioned that there are these two families, volatile memory, which does not survive a power cycle, and non-volatile memory, which does survive a power cycle. And I mentioned these trade-offs between EEPROM and flash. They're both non-volatile, and one of them is byte addressable and suitable for small, user settings and so on. And another it's better for bulk data, right? It's usable because it's best used in bulk writing and reading because the least amount of data that you can write is a page of 256 bytes or 512 bytes. Something to keep in mind. SRAM and DRAM are, static RAM and DRAM, these are both volatile options. Your microcontroller already typically has SRAM and flash, right? This is most common. Some of them do have EEPROM as well. But on this slide, I'm referring to external use of EEPROM, flash, SRAM, and DRAM, external memories. So this is for the case where the limited amount of memory that's present in your micro, if you think that is insufficient for the scope of your project, then you would do your externally interfaced external memory. SRAM and DRAM are both options as well. DRAM is a bit slower and it has its own refresh cycle management, which you don't have to worry about. The controller will do it for you. Having said that, it is definitely slightly more complex to interface. So typically, if you have a project where you're acquiring an image and trying to do some analysis of the image, that is the type of project that ends up using external SRAM and DRAM because the limited amount of memory in your micro is insufficient. But outside of that, you should not even need to see this for the vast majority of your projects. If you can fit within the memory that's available, in the microcontroller. Moving on to wired communication interfaces, I'll mostly be talking about the two popular ones, which is USB and Ethernet. So like the 802.11 family on the wireless front, on the wired front, there is, USB. It has gone through a whole range of evolutions, and it's you know this, you're familiar with this good old interface format, the physical interface, which everybody loves to hate. The joke goes that with USB, you always try it once and that doesn't work. Then you flip it over and that doesn't work either. And then when you flip it back to the original orientation, that's when it works, right? So that good old annoying interface, it turns out, is surprisingly versatile, both for data communication and for power supply. It's fairly popular, and if you use it, we can support it quite well. Now, within the USB terminology, we refer to hosts and devices, or hosts and clients. A host is something like a laptop, which acts as the bus master, and it is the only one allowed to initiate bus transactions. The client merely has to respond. So this used to be a big, a very strict definition. Things were either hosts or client devices. But with the coming of smartphones, it started becoming more iffy. For example, when you connect your smartphone to your laptop, you want this to act like a client, because possibly the user wants to browse what files are there saved on the phone, right? At that point, the laptop is the host and the phone has to act like a client device. But at the same time, you could plug a card reader, a SD card reader or something to your phone. And in that case, the phone has to act as the host and the card reader acts as the device. So to support this, the feature to look for is USB OTG or USB on the go. Using one other line in the USB interface, it can control whether it's acting as a host or a client. I am showing you a whole bunch of physical interfaces, the connector options, but the most common ones that we see are, the micro B and the mini B. This is a slightly bigger form, but these two are the most common. In fact, most of the dev boards that you buy for your microcontroller will support one of these two interfaces. So using these is fairly straightforward. This is five lines, and they're well-defined, and you can use them. We have a lot of experience with the mini Bs and the micro Bs in this course. The reversible type C, which takes away the pain of, the polarity, getting the polarity right of the USB connector. It is a bit harder to support. Having said that, with breakout boards and so on, we have had luck in the past. It also has some fairly demanding other supporting chips that need to be implemented on the PCB. But at least for a breakout board implementation, there are some options there. Now, one key thing is if you're using USB for communication, everything that I was talking about is relevant, right? But if you're using USB for power delivery, this is not uncommon. You plug something into a USB and you draw power or you charge your battery. It's a fairly common interface. And if you want to do that, you should be aware of how much power you can get. So in general, while the amount of power has been increasing, generation to generation as USB evolves, the bottom line is you always start out with a default minimal amount of power. I believe it is half a watt, 5 volts at 100 milliamps. That's typically what you can get for free without, talking to the USB controller and requesting additional power. If you go through a power negotiation process, as defined in the USB standard, you can probably, draw more power as indicated, with these higher current ratings. Now, the latest USB-C, it's not an evolutionary change in terms of power delivery. It's a dramatically higher amount of power that it can deliver. For example, even the standard USB-C cables, any unmodified USB-C cable is capable of delivering up to 60 watts, 20 volts at 3 amps. That's a 60 watt power delivery cable, right? And that's just the standard cable. There are, superior versions of the USB-C standard optimized for power delivery that can go up to 100 watts. Odds are that, at least in this course, we have not seen any projects that use Type-C USB to deliver this kind of high power. If your project is doing that, please talk to us. That may involve a whole set of other interfacing requirements that we don't have a whole lot of experience with, but we'll be happy to help you figure it out. Okay, moving on to the other interface, Ethernet. So this is your good old RJ45 cables, the things that are most typically used for your server boxes and things like that. There are some cases where it makes sense to use them. If your project is just a big box that just sits drawing power from a wall and so on, it may be, Sorry about the interruption. Let me restart. So there are cases where wired Ethernet is a perfectly good way to interface your project with internet connectivity. And it's fairly simple. There are special Ethernet interface chips that, again, make it simple in the sense that your micro can talk to the interface chip using a simple protocol like UART or SPI, and the chip, the Ethernet controller, handles all of the communication. Now, power over Ethernet is a very nice feature. Sometimes you can design a device that draws power from the Ethernet lines and communicates over Ethernet. So in that sense, the two jacks that you see here, you know, the Ethernet jack and the power delivery barrel jack, those two may both be combined if you use power over Ethernet, and we've had some of those projects successfully executed in 477 as well. So that's it for wired interfacing, and thank you all.